with its oak walls and dark old bindings, made a good setting for such evocations, and ghostly experiences at first hand being, after Murchard's brilliant opening, the only kind acceptable to us, we proceeded to take stock of our group and tax each member for a contribution. There were 8 of us, and 7 contrived, in a manner more or less adequate, to fulfill the condition imposed. It surprised us all to find that we could muster such a show of supernatural impressions, for none of us, excepting Murchard himself and young Phil Frenham, whose story was the slightest of the lot, had the habit of sending our souls into the invisible. So that, on the whole, we had every reason to be proud of our 7 exhibits, and none of us would have dreamed of expecting an 8th from our host. Our old friend, Mr. Andrew Colwyn, who had sat back in his armchair, listening and blinking through the smoke circles with a cheerful tolerance of a wise old idol, was not the kind of man likely to be favored with such contacts, though he had imagination enough to enjoy, without envying, the superior privileges of his guests. By age and by education, he belonged to the stout positivist tradition, and his habit of thought had been formed in the days of the epic struggle between physics and metaphysics. But he had been, then and always, essentially a spectator, a humorous, detached observer of the immense, muddled variety show of life, slipping out of his seat now and then for a brief dip into the convivialities at the back of the house, but never, as far as one knew, showing the least desire to jump on the stage and do a turn. Among his contemporaries, there lingered a vague tradition of his having, at a remote period, and in a romantic clime, been wounded in a duel. But this legend no more tallied with what we younger men knew of his character than my mother's assertion that he had once been a charming little man with nice eyes corresponded to any possible reconstitution of his dry, thwarted physiognomy.
"He never can have looked like anything but a bundle of sticks," Murchard had once said of him.
"Or a phosphorescent log, rather,"
someone else amended. And we recognized the happiness of this description of his small, squat trunk, with the red blink of the eyes in a face like mottled bark. He had always been possessed of a leisure which he had nursed and protected, instead of squandering it in vain activities. His carefully guarded hours had been devoted to the cultivation of a fine intelligence and a few judiciously chosen habits. And none of the disturbances common to human experience seemed to have crossed his sky. Nevertheless, his dispassionate survey of the universe had not raised his opinion of that costly experiment, and his study of the human race seemed to have resulted in the conclusion that all men were superfluous, and women necessary only because someone had to do the cooking. On the importance of this point, his convictions were absolute, and gastronomy was the only science which he revered as dogma. It must be owned that his little dinners were a strong argument in favor of this view, besides being a reason, though not the main one, for the fidelity of his friends. Mentally, he exercised a hospitality less seductive but no less stimulating. His mind was like a forum, or some open meeting place for the exchange of ideas, somewhat cold and drafty, but light, spacious and orderly, a kind of academic grove from which all the leaves had fallen. In this privileged area, a dozen of us were wont to stretch our muscles and expand our lungs, and, as if to prolong as much as possible the tradition of what we felt to be a vanishing institution, 1 or 2 neophytes were now and then added to our band. Young Phil Frenham was the last and the most interesting of these recruits, and a good example of Murchard's somewhat morbid assertion that our old friend liked him juicy. It was indeed a fact that Colwyn, for all his mental dryness, specially tasted the lyric qualities in youth. As he was far too good an Epicurean to nip the flowers of soul which he gathered for his garden, his friendship was not a disintegrating influence. On the contrary, it forced the young idea to robuster bloom. And in Phil Frenham, he had a fine subject for experimentation. The boy was really intelligent, and the soundness of his nature was like the...